This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za. You're listening to Lerato Mbele on Power 98.7.
So the time has gone 10:40, and let's turn our attention now to events in other parts of the world. Because you know what? I know we're bogged down by a lot of things going on in our country, but trust me, there's a lot going on in the world as a whole. The National Rally has won 33% of the popular vote in the first round of France's snap two-round general election. And according to the final results, with the left-wing New Popular Front alliance at 28%, and the president Emmanuel Macron's centrist Together bloc at 21%. So a national vote share, however, is extremely difficult to translate into a projected number of seats in the Assemblée Nationale. That's because the final outcome will depend on the results inside the constituencies. But pollsters issue seat estimates, and France's election watchdog does not endorse them. Voters will then gear up for a decisive second round of voting on the 7th of July, which is when who controls the government will be decided. So my understanding of the French system, and the experts are going to help us with that, is that in general, most elections go into two rounds. So there's round one, and then there's that decisive round two. And in round one, that took place at the weekend, the party of Marine Le Pen, who is regarded as an ultra-right nationalist, is the one that got the larger proportion of votes. And so if this last election is anything to go by, it's expected that after the 7th of July, they are going to get it, which then means that the parliament will be dominated by a right of centre, and not even right of centre, an ultra-right party. And many terms are used to describe them, from nationalist to super conservative to fascist, even to racist, some people have said. Are the parties that seem to be gaining traction. Now, this party also contested the European elections because, you know, the countries of Europe, most of them, Western Europe, are part of what you call the European parliamentary system, where there's a European parliament that sits in Brussels. And in terms of France's representation there, they did really, really well. And so the question is, what exactly is going on? They also have a presidential system in France. So Emmanuel Macron, who is the current French president, his position for now is secure. So these are elections at a national assembly level, and I think at a national government level, we'll find out. So this is what's happening inside the parliament. How then do you have a president who represents one group, then perhaps maybe going to work with an organization that represents a completely different ideological point of view? And this is where the French have termed the coin cohabitation. And it means in France what it does in English, which is now you're suddenly going to have two people who are not ideologically married in any way having to live and work together. But it might mean that there's a change of prime minister because they've got that system in government. And then leading up to the presidential elections, it might be an indicator that things are going to change. And finally, like I said, this is not just happening in France. In Austria, they've also had an ultra-right victory. Earlier this year with Geert Wilders in the Netherlands, he, from the ultra-right, also won quite convincingly and so has become a kingmaker in the creation of a coalition in the Netherlands. So there's definitely a sense that in some European countries there is a tide turning, an ultra-nationalist tide turning. And the question is why? And even if you look at events in the United States and the resurgence of Donald Trump, a nationalist, right, conservative leader who appeals to the ultra-right, he might emerge president this year. So something is going on in the world. And the question is, what is that something? We're joined by Alexandra Barrière-Izart, who's the representative of French citizens in South Africa. Good morning, Alexandra.
Good morning. Good morning.
Thank you. Thank you for your time. And we also have our fave, Musa Mdunge, a political analyst and also a teacher at the University of Dundee in the UK. Good morning, Musa.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me. And good morning to your listeners.
It is my pleasure. Let's start with you, Alexandra, because you are French. You would understand the system in your country better. So tell us about what's happening in France right now politically and how a two-tiered election will make the decision.
First, you make a fantastic introduction. Emmanuel Macron, who is the president, decides to use Article 12 of the French Constitution to allow him to dissolve one room of the Parliament, Assemblée Nationale, you pronounce it very well. Now, what happened, he called again the population for two rounds of election for elect Parliament people. What last Sunday was the first round, and next Sunday is the final round. What will happen is the president is elected till 2027, and the government nominated by the president and the first minister is people from the parliament to decide who will be the first minister and propose the name to the president.
Wow.
That means that, as you say, is a cohabitation that existed before under the president François Mitterrand, who was a left president, and the first minister was from the right, and under Jacques Chirac, who was a right president, and the first minister was left.
Oh.
What is cool, I will say, the constitution is quite precise of what people can do, you know. Some you speak about the international relation is the power and the only power of the president. The first minister don't have to give his opinion on the international politics. The first minister organize the national politic and the administration management.
Okay, so there's a lot you've said there, Alexander, helping us understand the French system. So what you're saying is the French system works on a president as head of state and a prime minister as the head of government and national policy. And so this election, for all intents and purposes, is about to determine who makes up the parliament and who will then be nominated the prime minister to run all things French in France.
Exactly. The first minister needs to have the majority of the seats of the parliament or need to create a coalition for have the control of the parliament.
Right.
If not, with an option, we don't know if Marine Le Pen party, the extreme right, we call it in French, will have enough seats for have Jordan Bardella first minister.
Okay.
We don't know yet.
Okay, so the second round of elections will determine that particular outcome. But whatever the outcome, it's probable, Alexander, that for the remainder of his term until 2027, President Macron might have to cohabit with a prime minister from another party and also ideologically from the other side of the divide.
Totally, you're totally right. What is quite new on this election, for the past cohabitation was left and right, but never, Macron is the center, let's say like this. But never we get a cohabitation with the extreme right or extreme left. Any extreme is quite new. What will be, and maybe what can be is a worry, is like, they will fight a lot for the which minister can have this position. You know, we will have lot of negotiation between them.
Well, you live in South Africa, so I think you know all about negotiations right now.
if I get 13 years in South Africa, and what I can say, and what I say to all my South African friends, South Africa give a democratic lesson to the world. You, how you manage the policy in the last week, you can be very proud.
Thank you.
I'm very proud.
Thank you. Okay, before I bring Musa in, you've said this is the first time, even though cohabitation and two different parties having to share the functions of government, it's not new. It's happened under Chirac. It's happened under Mitterrand. But it's the first time that the party that might emerge is ultra right. Why is this happening in France? Because I'll tell you now, I've been to France many, many times. One of my best friends and former, you know, and she was my maid of honor at my wedding. So she's married to a Frenchman. I know the country fairly well. But whenever I've been in France and we see posters for Marine Le Pen, it used to be dismissed. But now you can't laugh about Marine Le Pen. What has changed?
The first, never the extreme right get the power in France. I mean, French people want to try something new. They want to say, oh, we try Macron, we try the left, we try the right, but and it's not working. Let's try something new, because to be campaigning is totally different to get the power and to execute the power. And they want to try something new. Also, that is the first idea of answer. The second idea of answer is like what proposed Marine Le Pen is to be less flexible on immigration. She wants to stop the immigration completely. She has a program to say no immigration, where we know is not possible. And she proposed some, for poor people, direct action plan for increase the level of life. For example, I can give you one. She wants to stop the VAT on petrol and oil and gas. But at the end of the day, someone needs to pay. How we will pay if we don't, if it's not French people to pay that, is called populism. Populism is, I can say.
Yeah, it's the same in English. Okay, we get it. Musa, let's bring you into the conversation, because there's quite a few things that Alexandra says, and just by way of qualifying what's going on. So when we hear ultra-right, you know, many of us, just deduce ultra-right to fascist, nationalist, racist. And I think there's an element of truth to that. Let's call a spade a spade. But many people also say it's not just about identity. It's also about fiscal management. And so these things that Alexandra is talking about, people feeling weighed down by the cost of living. So the proposal to reduce VAT on petrol and fuel and electricity, to tighten the borders immigration-wise, to try to preserve jobs for the locals, that's also what ultra-right politics represents. So it's not just racial or purely Islamophobic and anti-immigration.
Yes, indeed. I think you've hit it on the nail. And that's probably the crisis that a lot of the sort of centrist traditional parties or their supporters seem to not understand about this moment that is unfolding in Europe, where it seems like there is this rise in the wave of, you know, far-right politics. But as you've put it so nicely, to say it's not just about issues around race or identity or nationalism, but at its core is issues about daily living, the cost of living, people's feeling about the economy. And that is why, you know, Le Pen has been so popular and able to mount this rise in France, because the rise of the far right coincides with huge challenges in terms of the French economy. You know, it no longer is that prime economy in the same sense that you think of the German economy, the Chinese, or even the American economy. And so the ability for France to revive almost its economic importance, which would solidify its role as a leader in Europe, is being challenged. And so certainly these elections, what they do is they really solidify that misunderstanding between the centrist parties and the voters. And it shows not only in these elections, as you've placed them so well, but also in the European Union parliamentary elections, as well as the rise of fellow right-wing politicians such as Giorgia Meloni, who is in fact, coincidentally, the most popular leader among the G7. Wow. So certainly the message of the far right seems to be winning, because even when we look at polling, she outdoes Biden, she outdoes Rishi Sunak, she outdoes Macron. Wow. You know, even though her politics, some would argue, is distasteful, but clearly it receives a notch.
Okay, and Giorgia Meloni is the Prime Minister of Italy, and even her victory last year was a shock to everybody. Yes. So in Austria, we're seeing the rise of the far right. I spoke about Geert Wilders. Geert Wilders was the Dutch politician with the blonde hair. People used to dismiss him.
Yes.
But he won at the beginning of the year, and not an outright victory, but he's now the kingmaker in Dutch politics. Yes. So something is happening in Europe at the moment.
Something is happening in Europe at the moment, but, you know, Lerato, if I were to broaden this, something is happening in terms of democracies as a whole. Democracy, as I've argued, would be on the ballot this year. Whether it would be the best system by which the aspirations of the people is met. And fundamentally what you're seeing happening in France, in Italy, even in South Africa with the rise of the MK party, is people beginning to communicate how fed up they are with the status quo that leaves so many of them outside of the economic levers of power. And so essentially what happened in France is just symbiotic of what is happening at a global level, where populist leaders are finding space, not so much because of identity politics, but really because of the bread and butter issues that are affecting them, and somebody being able to give expression to those frustrations.
And then, Moussa, very briefly, you know, the fact that Macron's also had to do a few policy rethinks in the last year before these elections, the fact that he's also grown unpopular in places like Africa with France Afrique, and the policy even had to be cancelled, and they've had to realign inside the presidency what some of their foreign policy priorities will be in these foreign lands. Has that had a bearing on how French people see the government of the day?
Look, you know, I believe Alex is perhaps better placed to answer about their feeling. But what I would say is certainly, you know, Macron has had a difficult time in the international space, which has impacted, I would believe, you know, his local position or how he's seen locally. And certainly he has had bumpy roads in terms of his Africa policy. It seems like, you know, a lot of African countries are turning their back away from France. But also he's had a challenge between balancing the interests of Europe with the challenges that we find between the United States and China. And so he's trying to present a vision for Europe that allows it to stand together. But unfortunately, challenges back home hinder his international plans in legacy building, and vice versa. So we're talking about a leader who's really stuck between gridlock locally and as well as instability on an international level that is impacting his popularity.
Alexander, let's ask you to comment on this one, because you said, you know, these elections are about what's happening inside France nationally, in the parliament, local policy, but international relations gets done at the office of the president. But French people would follow what's happening in the world and how France is viewed by the world. And would they be watching some of these events and thinking, no, we're losing locally and we're losing stature internationally, and it's time for Macron to go?
Something is, what is true, and what we can recognize to Macron is for international relations, is a good president. On the way, the first one to speak fluently English, he worked internationally before. What I can say, Macron is pro-Europe. That is also a big difference with Marine Le Pen. Macron say, without Europe, we are nobody. And, you know, we speak in France about the German and French engine for Europe. And Marine Le Pen wants to cut a little bit that. And what I say, I mean, the first minister don't really have the power to decide what we say Macron internationally. Macron is he loves boxing. He will box and he will continue to fight for what he's believing. But yes, the first minister don't have to manage or have a voice on the international. He won't be invited, for example, to the international conference. It's only Macron.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, that's fine. We're going to wind the conversation down. Moussa, I'd like us to please turn away from France now and let's go to where you are, the UK, because they'll be going into national elections in the next week or so. And also things are happening there. But from what I can see, it's actually not quite the conversation we're having here that they're having in Britain. Almost 10 years ago, they had a whole conversation around leaving Europe, concerns about immigration, concerns about the economy, concerns. And then there was the Brexit vote and they voted to leave Europe, which was the first sign that Britain was becoming conservative, right, and right-winged or right policy orientated. And now it feels like people in Britain are saying, no, we need to go back to the centre. We need to go back left. And there's a sense that Labour might win this election. I don't know what your sense is.
Certainly, Lerato, Labour will definitely win this election. You have correctly diagnosed the British moment here. Because unlike what we are seeing in mainland Europe, where there's a movement towards far-right politics, you know, nationalism, in terms of Britain, we are seeing a move towards the center. And the prime reason for that, Lerato, is Boris Johnson. His rise and his fall, and the fall of the Conservative Party, the fact that they had three prime ministers in 1 year, all of that have fed the sensibility that we are experiencing in British politics currently, where people are saying, hold on, let's wait, let's be calm, and let's think critically about where we want to move as the British people. And that coincidentally coincides with them supporting, or it looks like they're going to give a lot of support towards Keir Starmer. But it doesn't mean this is going to be an easy election for him or post-election for him, because he's got critical questions to answer in terms of economic policy, that relationship with Europe again, as well as the questions around, you know, the UK's relationship with China and the United States. So there are many questions that he's got to answer. But for now, steady looking at things, it seems like Labour Party are looking to mount a red wave and return to power.
Moussa Mtunga, I hope we'll be able to speak to you in the next week, because your analysis is always so sober, and more than anything else, you're always able to make it make sense to those of us who are so far in Africa and in the Southern Hemisphere. Alexander, we hope to hear from you again after the second round. This has been quite enlightening. You've provided so much insights for us about your country, France. Merci beaucoup, Monsieur Barrière Izard, and thank you to you. And thank you to you, Ngiyabonga Moussa Mtunga. It's news time.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.